Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Mystery to Me podcast. I'm Anya Kane.
And I'm Kevin Greenlee.
And we love movies and television shows with a whiff of mystery. Mystery to Me will feature us riffing on murder mysteries, film noir, cozy detective stories, police procedurals, psychological thrillers, legal dramas, tales of teen sleuths, and more.
Once we're done yucking it up about whatever we've just seen, we'll serve up our five-star final takes on whether it's worth your time.
If you're offended by silliness, profanity, political asides, canine-related interruptions, and losers laughing at their own bad jokes, beware. Also note that some of the stories we'll be talking about are pretty dark, and in some cases exceptionally badly written. So content warning for murder, violence, suicide, torture, rape, racism, misogyny, homophobia, transphobia, and bigotry.
If there's a movie or show you'd like for us to talk about, email us at mysterytomepodcast@gmail.com. Our show's take on genre is pretty loosey-goosey. So as long as your suggestion has some dash of mystery, we're interested in hearing about it.
Spoiler alert, we're going to be discussing the entirety of this show or movie, spoilers and all. So if you want to be surprised, press pause, go watch the thing, then join us for the show. Now that you've heard our spiel, go ahead and polish off those magnifying glasses and slip into your favorite trench coat. Let's get mysterious. So, Kevin, what did we just watch?
Well, Anya, we watched episode 11 of the second season of one of your favorite programs ever, Quincy. Name of the episode is Sullied Be Thy Name.
When did it air?
It aired all the way back on May 6, 1977, just a few weeks prior to the release of Star Wars on May 25th, 1977.
And is it an appropriate air date, given that this episode features death by tacky orange carpet?
Yeah, that's actually a big plot point, which you've just gone ahead and spoiled for everyone.
Well, as
now people won't have to watch the episode.
Yeah, I'm a fucking hero, is what you're saying. People should be saluting me.
You say that every time you wake up in the morning.
It's true, but here's the thing: this was a roller coaster of an episode, guys. I think you and I, when we first started watching this, we turned to each other, eyes sparkling with joy, and said, "We have to review this for Mystery to Me." And I think by the halfway point, we were regretting having said that. And then at the end, it kind of picked back up. So I don't know what to say other than this was a wild ride.
Yes. It was directed by Jackie Cooper. Who, of course, you remember.
Our gangs.
Our gang. He was crying in Our Gang.
He was in Superman.
He, of course, played Perry White in the Christopher Reeve Superman movies.
Respectable editor directing a not so respectable episode of Quincy ME.
Well, were there a couple of moments though where it seemed like he was trying? There was like a little bit of ambition.
There was like ambition. This actually the show starts off with kind of like almost what looks like almost like a fisheye lens or something that, you know, kind of made everything look distorted, and it was taking you through all the seedy avenues of, I guess, LA.
Yeah.
And like, it was like, it wasn't great, but you felt like there was some effort there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're going to make this look a little bit different, a little bit distorted, a little bit kind of to show that things are not what they seem. And this dark, glitzy part of town is a bit disturbing underneath all the glamour.
And then the mystery of the episode is it's Quincy's. Quincy is just an average working Joe. He works the day shift. But late at night on the night shift, he gets a special call from one of his detective buddies. Well, I say it's a detective buddy. It's a guy that...
Detective frenemy?
Yeah, he says, oh, Quincy, you always make waves. He seems to be frustrated with Quincy sometimes. But he specifically requested him on this case, in which a man is found dead in the bed of a sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
And Quincy's, well, what's the big deal? This happens every day. This isn't news.
It'll probably happen to me, says Quincy.
But the big twist, the shocking twist, is...
That's not shocking for anybody born out, and anybody who's lived through the 21st century, let's just say.
Which is no one who watched this episode.
That's
when
fair.
It was there.
That's fair.
People hadn't even seen Star Wars yet.
This is going to blow your tiny minds.
Now, they might have read the Star Wars novelization, which had already come out.
Had you?
Yes.
So you were way ahead of the... You would have seen this whole thing coming. You would have been smoking your little Kevin cigar. And...
I probably would have already read the Quincy novelization.
What a sad state of your childhood.
There must be Quincy novels. If not, I think you should write them. Write some Quincy fanfic.
Just get the typewriter going.
What do you think Quincy's doing today? Assuming he's still...
Well, wouldn't it, instead of aging him up, because he's already, you know, he's already well on in his years by the 70s.
He's in his golden years,
he's
as
in
some
his
would
golden...
say.
Exactly, euphemistically. Wouldn't it be better to just bring him into the modern day and just have him be doing modern things like they did with MacGyver or something?
So you see, in your Quincy reboot, you have basically Quincy as a one-man CSI operation?
Yeah, basically.
Who plays the modern-day Quincy?
I don't know. You got to get someone who's really fun but cranky. I mean, because Jack Klugman's just so good. Honestly, he just makes everything kind of interesting. Like, he, even when he's just having little tiffs with his bar-owning buddies, he's just charismatic and fun to watch. And I think that's what makes the show work more often than not. Because usually the plots are stupid. It's stupid. But you're like, oh, what's he going to say? And he's always going on these impassioned speeches and yelling at everybody. And I love that. So I don't know who you get to do it today.
Kiefer Sutherland?
Oh, my God. I can't.
Yeah, because that's it.
Would he be, like, torturing the suspect? A coroner's not supposed to do any of this. He's, like, electrocuting people.
So I picked one. You pick one. Who's your Quincy?
Let me think. You know who would have been really fun?
Who?
But he's dead, so it's not a good choice. Lenny Briscoe himself.
Oh, Jerry Orbach.
Yeah,
that'd be fine.
That would be great.
So the twist is... We'll come back to this later.
Okay. Yeah, I need time to think.
Yeah.
Simmer on it.
It's never stopped you before. The first time in the history of this program you put thought into something you said. So the twist is the dead man is a priest. And so the police detective says, by God, we've got to protect his name and prove that he didn't actually die in the bed of a prostitute or a
sex
worker.
Let's cover up for the Catholic Church. What could go wrong?
Yes.
What could go wrong, folks? And I say this as a Catholic. Good God. This made me smile because, like, the fact that they were getting so pressed over this priest possibly having consensual sex with an adult was just darkly, bitterly amusing all these years later. The fact that they were getting so, like, I mean, like, this guy, this detective, he's screaming, he's ranting, and it's so disturbing because it's like, you're just supposed to, like, look into things, and if you have a gut feeling that something's off, then look into that. But, like, he's basically telling Quincy, I won't accept that my friend had a side of him that I didn't know about. You need to prove that he was innocent.
Which, of course, is not the job of a coroner.
No. Or a detective. It's not his job to prove one guy. It's your job to look at the evidence and go where that takes you. But you not put your thumb on the scale.
Exactly. So you were concerned with the ethics of this.
I'm always big on the ethics. Yeah, I was, it was just like, oof. Basically, I mean, these guys just use the coroner's offices. They're like, you know, let's make the world what I want it to be office, essentially. Because half the time it's like, this doesn't feel right. This guy wouldn't have killed himself, or this guy wouldn't have seen a sex worker. And it's like, have you ever considered that you didn't know them that well, or that they wouldn't tell you about it? Mr. Detective? Also, you'd think that a police detective would be a little bit more jaded, right?
Yeah. Been around the block a few times.
Yeah, you know, come on.
And I think it's at this point we see there's a news program on, and it's doing a story about the death of this priest. And they're giving me like 3 or 4 minutes. And can you imagine a TV news program giving that kind of time to the death of someone who's not like Michael Jackson?
I don't. Yeah, no, definitely not. They're acting like this guy's famous because he founded a bunch of halfway houses and he's leading a crusade against pornography. So everyone's obviously following up on that.
And actually, we get to visit one of his halfway houses. And that was a scene that you found very delightful.
There's, at one point, there's this other priest talking to the detective, and then one of the halfway house enrollees or whatever, you know, someone who's just out of prison, comes up and is like, tell me it's not true. Tell me he wasn't visiting with a sex worker. I just can't believe it.
Did he say, like, why?
Why? Why? Why did this happen to the father? And I was like, oh, my God. Everyone's acting so dainty in this episode. This guy went to prison for armed robbery and assault. And he's sitting here with his, like, you know, falling on his fainting couch with the smelling salts. Like, it just was really... This whole episode was very funny to me. I love the beginning part because it just sets up this, like everyone's getting so outraged and so into this. And the only guy who's making any sense is Sam, the doctor's assistant guy, or, like, assistant physician. And he's basically like, well, I mean, it looks like a coronary. It looks like, you know, looks like a heart attack that he had and its natural causes. He wasn't poisoned. Nothing else happened. So, you know, we just got to kind of go where the facts lead us. And everyone's like, no, it can't be. He's the only sane man in the room at this point.
And then we meet the main pornographer that he's agitating against, mm-hmm. played by veteran character actor John Saxon, who always wears, like, shirts that are, like, 3/4 of the way unbuttoned with big medallions. And, yeah.
Kind of like what you wear. He's aping your style.
It was a style that won you.
He looks crazy. And he's also making a lot of sense because he's like, well, why are you looking into this? You're the coroner. What are you doing here? Shouldn't you be in the lab? And I'm like, this man is the only one who understands in this whole show about, like, what he's the one asking the real questions. No one else is coming to Quincy and being like, you need to sit the fuck down. What are you doing?
He's delaying his report.
Delaying his report. His boss is angry. His boss is, like, being passive aggressive with him. I mean, it's just, if he puts this much energy into every single report, it's just, I mean, you got to imagine the backlog is a nightmare in that county.
Obviously, he's not. obviously some he's just slapping out.
He's just rubber stamping some of them. But if your friend is a detective, then, you know, if you die under strange circumstances, then that's gonna merit something.
One of the other potential suspects is a young lady who later worked with Governor Gatling on Benson. She's very likable on Benson, a bit less likable here. She admits that she told the priest she was had certain interests in him, of a romantic nature, and she said they had some conversations about everything under the sun.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Yeah, she pretty openly admitted that too.
To the coroner.
To the coroner. The coroner's like, did you guys have romantic conversation? And she's like, oh yes. Her like eyes are shining. It's like, what? That's odd. That's this whole episode is just so.
As you said, you're a Catholic. You've talked to many priests in your life. Is this unusual to have a romantic conversation?
She's basically admitting to having an emotional affair with a priest. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
I don't know if that's unusual. I mean, I've certainly never had an emotional affair with a priest, but I'm sure it happens. People are people, you know, even if they take a vow of celibacy, and you know, that stuff can happen. I can say that it's very much frowned upon. You're not supposed to do that, cuz I mean that's bad and confusing for both parties if you're not going to leave the priesthood.
At least by her account, he wasn't discouraging her.
No, he wasn't discouraging her, and he wasn't saying let me reassess, maybe I should leave the priesthood. And
he wasn't having sex with her, but he was certainly having interesting conversations with her.
Well, I think you're allowed to have interesting conversations.
I'm trying to use euphemisms here.
Oh, you're doing like a 70s detective thing where you're...
Because I'm trying not to say they were probably talking a lot about sex. Yeah, at one point in the show, they had a conversation using euphemisms, which went completely over your head.
I wasn't listening that much. It was the boring starting part. And they were just, you know, I'm not listening to the content. I'm watching Quincy's crazy facial expressions where he's like, you know, da-da-da-da-da, and like he's just getting all wide-eyed and frustrated.
It went over your head.
Whatever.
Because you're so innocent.
Well, you're such a perv. I'm sure it went right into your head.
It went into my head, as it were, because I listened carefully. And then the final suspect is a lawyer. He had an unusual appearance.
He looked like a wax figure, like a Madame Tussauds situation going on. Just an odd looking person. And every time they'd close up on him, you'd be like, is that person real for us? And he's walking around. He's seemingly involved with the lawyer lady who was having the emotional affair with the priest. And he's all over this thing.
Like a cheap suit.
Yeah. But, the second you see a lawyer come up in one of these things, you're like, he's the bad guy. Because they're just all, you can't trust him. Isn't that right, Kevin?
This is, of course, the part of the episode where Anya makes pathetic attempts to try to bait me.
Kevin says that lawyers are princes among men. I think, I don't know, you be the judge after listening to this.
And you're saying, well, Kevin, you should completely reassess everything you believe about the world and your profession based upon this nearly 50-year-old episode of Quincy. What if I did that? What if I said, oh my God.
Then you'd be waking up to something.
Everything I believed is wrong. Thank God for Quincy, for Barnaby Jones. It's woke me up.
What does Barnaby Jones have to do with this?
It's the same show.
It's the same show in the way that, you as an awake person is the same as you when you're sleeping. Yeah, it maybe you're the same person, but it's a totally different...
It's the same
energy
show.
Level.
It's the same show of vaguely... Cranky old man walking around.
Barnaby Jones didn't seem cranky to me. He seemed way too chill. People would be dropping big bricks on his head, and he'd be like, oh, wow, it's weird. He was way too chill. And Quincy's not chill at all. That's the difference. They're two different types of old men. And I feel like this is the difference. When we're talking here, we're making eye contact. Where this animation, we're discussing things, there's back and forth. Barnaby Jones is more like what you were doing last night, which was sleep talking for a while, and you're not making any sense, and it's very Barnaby Jones.
I was talking in my sleep because it's the only time I get a chance to talk.
You're certainly doing a lot of yapping on this show.
Because in our day-to-day life, for some reason, someone else is talking all the time. And I never get the opportunity.
And that person is Quincy.
If you're comparing yourself to Quincy, I'm not going to argue the point.
Well, if I'm Quincy, then you're fucking Barnaby Jones, you sleepy old man.
You're cranky. Every little thing upsets
you. You're Barnaby Jones because I could see you somehow stumbling. The one episode we just watched, there's electric wires coming down on him. And you're like, this guy's just a big inconvenience.
You're basically Quincy.
And you're basically Barnaby. And that's our relationship, folks. How do we make it work? Not even we know. In fairness, I don't think we can call you Barnaby Jones just yet. We have only watched one episode. So I think, the jury's out on that.
And in fairness, you're probably more like President Logan from 24.
What makes you say that, Kevin?
Well, that's a little bit of a spoiler because we haven't done that episode yet. I'm sure we would go into that in depth.
Okay. A very specific decision to bring that up.
So those are our suspects. And also, there's some local color. There's a bar that Quincy goes to where the owner of the bar, a very drowsy, sleepy man, always complains. Oh, Quincy, you're posting. Oh, Quincy,
you're posting on Twitter. What year is this?
Quincy, you're parking your meat wagon outside. You're parking your police car outside. What's wrong with you? And he likes to tell stories about a man named Markowitz. And you need to know that for the Sacco ending.
I first imagined he was talking about the husband of Countess Markowitz, the famed Irish revolutionary who participated in the Easter Rising. But I was wrong, apparently.
I thought he was talking about the comedy writer Mitch Markowitz.
I guess we were both wrong. So where do things go from there? How? we immediately know because it's a Quincy episode. There's never ever a Quincy episode, imagine, where they're like, actually, no, it was the boring answer. Bye, everybody. You know something bad happened to the priest.
Well, he died.
He died.
What could be worse than that?
But that, it turns out, he didn't just die. He was pretty much murdered.
I don't even understand this. So basically, they notice way later than they should have. Way later than this meticulous coroner should have noticed. He notices that on the guy's neck, there are impressions similar to a tire. And so they figure out that this guy, this pornographer, was going to run an article in his magazine about the priest, criticizing the priest. So the priest goes to the pornographer's office, sees the article, has a coronary, at which point they put him in the back of a car, in the trunk. He's still alive. He has another coronary and he dies, and they drop his body off with the hooker. And
the sex worker.
And so then they drop his body off with the sex worker. So I have many questions here. One of which is, why do they do this? If he has a coronary in the office of the pornographer, why not just either call it for an ambulance or call the meat wagon?
I think you were confused. He didn't have the coronary in the office of the pornographer. He left the office and then went to the lawyer's office.
Okay.
I don't know, though. It still doesn't really make any sense.
I was confused.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense because you'd think the lawyer would be extra scrupulous and be like, listen, even though it would benefit my client for this guy to die, I don't want to go to jail on a murder or manslaughter charge. So I should bring him in. Like, it's not that hard.
And also, he's involving a sex worker in his little plot. I don't even understand what he gains by this.
Basically, what I'm my understanding is that by discrediting the priest posthumously and saying, look, he's sleeping with sex workers, so he's not so high and mighty, that he's basically, like, making it so that the priest's efforts to make more strict laws on pornography go away because it becomes unpopular because he discredits the guy. Seems kind of like a roundabout thing. You don't really gain an immediate win from that, you know? So I'm not defending it. I'm just saying that's my understanding. The whole thing seems like, frankly, wouldn't they have probably done better in the press if they'd tried to save the priest and brought him to the hospital and like did an interview like, yeah, listen, we disagree with him, but we're fucking heroes and we just, you know, we're just trying to save people. You know, like, and buy our pornography. That would have been like a great...
That's what you would have done.
That's like a wholesome branding. Like, we saved a fucking priest, so how bad can we be? You know, instead of like, we kind of murdered a priest. They did murder him because Quincy said that if he survived the first heart attack and if he had received prompt medical care, they could have saved him from the second one because the stuff you can do in the hospital to help people dealing with that.
What?
Instead of putting him in the trunk. Well, you're acting all confused. Oh, I don't know if it was murder.
You're telling me there are things they can do in a hospital to assist in the
care
of
the lawyer
sick.
Who is acting like, I don't know, I don't know how they came to murder. They put him in the trunk of the car.
I don't know why they did it.
Yeah, I don't know why they did it either. It just seems like it would have been something to not do, and it would have made more sense if the writing had been like, oh, that he was about to blow the whistle on a specific thing that they were trying to keep from coming out. That would have made a little bit more sense. But this was more of like, no, we just kind of want to start a sleazy PR campaign. Not worth going to jail for murder.
There's no proof the pornographer knew anything about it or the woman. And so we close with Quincy at the bar with his detective friend. Suddenly a couple of police officers come in and say, there's somebody up on Suicide Mountain. Was it Suicide Mountain?
I think it was Suicide Bridge.
And why would you name your bridge that?
Seems pretty disrespectful.
There's a jumper out on Suicide Bridge. His name is Markowitz.
And everybody in the bar looks at each other. Ooh.
Freeze frame, and we're out. Quincy.
So this one in the beginning really benefited from the just outrageous moral outrage that everyone's yelling and running around and screaming, and then the savvy villainous pornographer who's basically like too plot savvy for his own good of like, why are you doing this? And then it kind of lags for a while, and then it kind of comes back with some zingers. So I'd say all in all, it's all right.
Wouldn't you rather have seen more of Quincy and less of the angry detective?
Yeah, the detective being so angry on behalf of this guy, this priest guy, was kind of weird. Because basically he's like, oh yeah, I doubted his halfway house idea, but then I came around. But it's not like, oh, he was my priest that I went to his church. It's like, I don't know, why are you getting so crazy?
Are you talking to me? Or are you talking to the detective?
I'm talking to the detective.
Yeah, it was really quite the lame affair.
But you were enjoying it. What do you think worked for it?
Everything was really broad and ridiculous at first. There's even a scene where Quincy picks up a copy of the pornographer's magazine and is all shocked by it and makes faces. And was I'm very tired. I'm not on my A game. Barely paying attention.
Same.
Wasn't there a scene where somebody said, oh, we need somebody to be a pantyhose model? And Quincy says, oh, I'd be flattered to do that.
Yeah, that was weird. And the Quincy got turned on at the pornography office because he was looking at the centerfolds. So I don't know if we needed to see that, but we did.
That's something for the ladies. I know you were hoping I'd forget this, but I didn't. Who's your modern day Quincy?
Okay, I have two options. One's a little bit less famous, and then the other is a little bit more famous.
Less famous.
And they're both play detectives in LA in different shows that we've reviewed on this program. So these are some throwbacks for everybody. So if you wanted to do kind of like a fun Quincy, like really just kind of like lean into the fun element of like, what's going to happen next? I think you should get, I think his name is Michael T. Williamson from Boomtown. He's kind of a fun, charismatic guy, so you could have fun with that. He played Detective Fearless. So I'd love to bring him back. Give him some work. What's he been doing? Come on.
He was in the revival of WKRP in Cincinnati, right? Wasn't he Bubba Gump?
Okay, well, I don't know what any of those words mean.
Didn't he recently appear in an arc on Law & Order Organized Crime?
Well, let him come in and do this. That's what I say. And then the other person, just because I think he could be more of the serious Quincy, Jason Isaacs. He could be like kind of a darker, grimmer Quincy. Quincy got to start at the coroner's office looking into the death of someone he cared about, and then he's uncovering. He gets more involved than the average coroner because he thinks the police are corrupt, and he's trying to figure it all out. So that's the grimmer Quincy.
There'd be no humor in that version.
There's no humor. It's very self-serious.
Be joyless.
And they totally take the idea of a coroner doing too much as like, oh, we have to write around that instead of just letting him do his thing. So I think I'd probably rather watch the first one, but I think the second one would be more likely to get actually made.
Yeah.
In this viewing environment, it'd be like only on Showtime, Quincy, and then like no Emmy, just.
There'd be no Emmys at all.
No Emmys, no awards of any kind.
It'd be like our work. Completely scorned, ignored, spat upon. Vilified, given a sound thrashing.
A well-deserved one, in fairness.
Yes.
I'd say that the premise behind this silly episode is DOA, but it's still got us saying, give us this day our daily Quincy.
Thanks for listening this week. I'd like to give a special thanks to Kevin T. Greenlee, who's no relation to me. He's the guy that composed the great music for this podcast, and you can find him on the web at kevintg.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at MysteryToMe. That's mystery_to_me_.
and at Mystery to Me Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
And you can always send us recommendations and feedback of any kind at mysterytomepodcast@gmail.com.
We're not teens setting up Hotmail accounts in the early 2000s, so all of those spell out two as T-O.
Thanks so much for listening.